Reading number 14, Meshed, Persia. I crossed the Robat Pass on a cold March evening. The golden dome of Meshed glowed in the wintry sun below me. 500 weary miles from Tehran, finally over. The jolting ceased. The lorry skimmed Meshed's level cobbled stones as though on skis. Wide, poplar-lined boulevards, lighted cafes, modern buildings and grand villas set back from the road beckoned. Watching idly, for I was tired, we'd just passed a kebab shop when my driver swung a sudden left, plunging us into the pitch blackness of a narrow, walled street of half a mile. The lorry braked to a stop. I tensed, alert, fully awake. Lost? A hold-up. How the devil to escape?
Arrive, Sahib. Arrive now.
Our headlights caught the royal arms and a sign reading HBM Consul General on a massive pair of wrought iron gates. I took a deep breath and crossed my fingers. The gates swung open and a turbaned servant ushered me inside.
"Welcome, welcome! You must be Rose! Come on in! You must be dying for a cup of tea!"
My host's towering silhouettes filled their lighted doorway. The vice-consul and his wife lived in Meshed, close to the Afghan and Turkestan border, since the agency first opened in 1922. It took but a second to know we'd be lifelong friends. Free from Britain's conformist grip, expats pushed boundaries to their limit. Like my naked colonel in the greenhouse, like the mad Mitch Judge I'd met in India, Evie and Dishy Gastrel were reviving rain. I aped their independence, their sense of fun, hiking naked after rolling in an icy stream. 6 foot plus, Evie and Dishy were hard to miss. Both their children, too, four naked giants, they strode the mountains, clothes balanced on their heads, hands before their faces. "So we won't be recognized," they giggled. Wearing boots, sunglasses, and clothes upon my head, I, too, became a striding mountain giant most weekends.
"We'll show you polo. Proper polos it should be played," Evie and Dishy announced one day, and smiling exchanged looks. "Two Afghani teams are playing in the village on the Chinese border."
We joined the crowd of men, peering at a bare patch of earth marked by two rough circles gouged into the dirt at either end. We didn't have long to wait. Crack, rattle, crack, over the hubbub, rifle fire and whooping war cries startled. Two groups of turbaned men galloped onto the ground, wheeled to opposing ends. Arraigned loosely behind a line, derisive, threatening, whips cracking, horses fretting, each ten-man team wowsed themselves to fighting frenzy. An elder stepped from the cheering crowd, leading a goat to the middle ground. Bleeding, fearful, it made to escape. With one slice of the elder's sabre, its head went flying in a spatter of blood. The game began. Scooping, ripping, kicking, stabbing, both teams used every foul means they could to wrench the headless carcass from the other's possession and pitch it into their goal.
"Noted and understood," I acknowledged. "Okay, so that's proper polo." Impossible to take seriously, my career became a farce, a clandestine game of espionage where each country stole carefully planted disinformation and out-of-date ciphers from one another's safes. Russian, German, French, Turkish, British, each embassy robbed the others. Ridiculous, but a game we all enjoyed, despite its underlying serious side, issuing passports, helping white Russian refugees and aiding Russian Jews in their escape. One dark night, a scuffle and a cry for help woke me as some poor devil was kidnapped and dragged back across the frontier. We were powerless to act. To interfere would cause a diplomatic incident. Every country had its covert agenda for being in Meshed, though from the weekly fraternizing you'd never know any differences existed. At my first embassy party, I watched a Russian secret policeman lopped off the head of our MI6 man in a wild version of Oranges and Lemons, a musical game I played as a child. "Chop, chop, got you," he yelled. "You're it." Clutched tightly to a German bank clerk's bosom, our ambassador's wife spun giddy in a Strauss waltz, arms locked, hands touching secretaries, clerks, grand officials and junior staff alike danced the Highland Fling. Ignoring rank, they drank, ate, and played at parties hosted by consuls, embassies, and official residences. "Diavas, to you, to friendship between nations!" The Russians drank to get drunk. Bursting into song, they toasted Russia and wept without ever becoming belligerent. Our Russian hosts filled our glasses, insisting we down its fiery contents in a single gulp, hoping to worm non-existent secrets from their intoxicated guests. We used the same tactic. "Bottoms up," we challenged, handing the Russians a yard of ale. Not the smallest military detail let slip. For fear social contact with local Iranians and Meshed's multicultural population might be misconstrued politically, I was stuck with the embassy crowd. Then I discovered the Continental, a half-Iranian, half-European hotel. I'd slip into the upper auditorium to attend musical events and colourful folkloric performances. Katak, Cossack, ballet, Chinese acrobats, jugglers, and stylized three-hour Indian epics. Eyes watched my every move. I watched them back to glean what I could of their culture. Differing national dress and mannerisms, the audience represented the world. Life in Meshed was a holiday in paradise. After a sudden late snowfall that year, I wangled a ski trip in the Nishapur Hills, the birthplace of Omar Khayyam, just as the daffodils, snowdrops, hyacinths, and primroses burst through the melt to announce the spring. May arrived with the drowsy scent of blossoms, heavy in the air as the orchards and gardens burst into a fairyland. Mountain torrents tumbled through Meshed's flower-filled valleys and bluebell woods. Willow, poplar, larch, and pine grew from springy turf. I lay my head against a moss-covered mulberry root in the most beautiful place on earth. Little did I know I was soon to leave that heaven for an arid hell in the desert plateau, or that my days with the Foreign Service were numbered.